Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Descanso, 89.1 FM, recording at our studio in East County. Today we open our show with an update from Public News Service on the Nevada caucus results in the Democratic primary won by Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, and a look ahead on the presidential campaign trail. If you need health care, Covered California has extended the deadline to apply and made it easier to qualify for subsidies. But if you don't have health insurance by March 31st, you'll be facing fines under California law. A new Trump administration rule takes effect today, limiting some federal benefits for immigrants applying for green cards. Find out which immigrants will be impacted and which benefits are at stake on today's show. San Diego Assemblymember Lorena Gonzalez-Fletcher is co-authoring a new bill to provide relief for homeowners who are unable to get insurance due to wildfires or facing non-renewals of their policies in high fire risk areas, and we'll have the details. The Alpine Chamber of Commerce will host a forum for candidates running for supervisor in the 2nd District to fill the seat being vacated by Diane Jacob due to term limits. La Mesa has a new city manager. Find out who on today's show. Then on Crime Beat, hear about an attempted kidnapping of a baby outside Parkway Plaza shopping mall in El Cajon. A suspect is now in custody. Plus, we'll have the latest trends in illegal drug trafficking in the San Diego region from a new DEA report. On People Power, learn how you can help people in need through a Leap of Kindness drive sponsored by the Lakeside Chamber of Commerce. We'll also have news about a hiking leader who died on the trail near Hakumba Hot Springs and a memorial service planned in her memory. In Lemon Grove, Activist San Diego is organizing a march and rally outside a Toyota dealership Saturday to protest Toyota's support of a Trump administration lawsuit against California, which seeks to roll back California's clean air emission standards. Then on Destination East County, hear about all the most exciting festivals and events coming up across our inland region, from wildflower walks to concerts, classic cruise nights, and St. Patrick's Day festivities. In honor of the 100th anniversary of women winning the right to vote this year, we'll be re-airing our Sounds of History episode on Helen Stoddard, a remarkable East County suffrage leader who helped women win the right to vote in California, which in turn helped local residents win enough votes to declare cityhood for La Mesa. We'll also re-air an interview with a local woman author, Zoraa Gharamani, an Iranian immigrant and critically acclaimed author of Sky of Red Poppies and The Moon Daughter. Plus, hear about a lawsuit filed by local environmentalists against the city of Santee over its climate action plan. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
Welcome to 2020 Talks, where we track the 2020 election process.
According to three networks in the AP, we have now won the Nevada caucus.
Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders led Saturday's Nevada Democratic caucuses by over 25 points, winning 42% of the non-white vote, and former presidential candidate author Marianne Williamson endorsed him at a San Antonio rally. Former Vice President Joe Biden came in second place overall and among non-white voters.
We're alive and we're coming back and we're going to win.
Former South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg was third, though with less than 10% of the non-white vote. The Nevada Democrats declined his request to hold off on releasing results. The campaign said they found inconsistencies between their numbers and the party's tabulations. After congratulating Sanders in a speech Saturday night, Buttigieg went after him.
Before we rush to nominate Senator Sanders in our one shot to take on this president, let us take a sober look at what is at stake for our party, for our values, and for those with the most to lose.
Despite praising how Nevada Democrats handled the caucuses, former Senate Majority Leader from Nevada, Harry Reid, called for an end to all caucuses. Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren finished fourth. Professor Rebecca Gill from the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, says the most recent debate may have had an impact.
At least half of the votes in this cycle were cast before the debate, where she had that incredible performance. And so maybe it's just a matter of that bump hasn't manifest yet.
Sanders got more union support than any other candidate, according to CNN entrance polls. Before the caucuses, the influential Culinary Workers Union, Local 226, criticized Sanders' Medicare for All plan, fearing it might be worse than what unions have fought for. Professor Gill says while many union members love their health care,
if they, you know, have to change jobs, if they lose their job, then all of this goes away and there's no safety net, really. And, you know, particularly in Nevada, where, you know, we have the kind of economy where there is a lot of churn.
Meanwhile, President Donald Trump replaced Acting Director of National Intelligence Joseph McGuire, angered by a briefing McGuire gave to congressional leaders about Russia's 2020 election interference to benefit Trump. Professor Gill was troubled by the president's attitude.
At least last time we had government institutions that were attempting to dissuade this kind of interference. And certainly now the federal government is sending the opposite message.
Other national security officials report Russia's overall aim is to stir conflict and undermine trust in American institutions, supporting Sanders as well. This weekend in a statement, Sanders told Russian President Vladimir Putin to, quote, stay out of American elections, and as president, I will make sure that you do, unquote. From Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Lily Bulkey. Thanks to 2020 Talks intern Danny Gare, and thanks for listening at pacificanetwork.org and publicnewsservice.org.
This is Jonathan Getz with a health report. Many people don't know that although the federal government waived fines for not having health care coverage, the state of California plans to impose its own fines. Fortunately for those without insurance, California has extended the deadline from January 31st to March 31st to get health insurance or pay stiff penalties. If you signed up for Covered California by March 31st, you can avoid fines that can be over $2,000 for a family of four. The fines will be assessed on residents when they file state tax returns in 2021. You can also sign up as late as April 30th for a Covered California health care plan and pay a reduced fine. The state also increased subsidies to help more people afford to buy insurance. You can now qualify for help if you earn up to $74,940 as an individual or up to $154,500 for a family of four. The subsidies can reduce premiums by $500 to $600 a month or more. The state will also keep enrollment open for consumers insured directly through private health plans who did not realize they qualified for state subsidies through Covered California. An estimated 280,000 residents are likely eligible for new subsidies, according to Covered California. You can get quotes for Covered California health insurance plans and information on subsidies at coveredca.com.
Starting Monday, immigrants applying for green cards will be subject to the Trump administration's new public charge rule. The changes make it harder for people who receive certain types of public assistance to be approved. Benefits used before February 24th will not count, and the changes do not include the use of WIC or Medi-Cal for children. At Plasencia Consulting, immigration advocate Hector Plasencia says before this, the feds only considered use of programs like Supplemental Security Income, CalWORKs, and nursing home care under Medi-Cal.
What is being added starting this coming Monday, February 24th, it's going to include CalFresh, housing, Section 8, and public housing, and federally funded Medicaid.
The changes don't affect many immigrants, including those who are U.S. citizens, legal residents, refugees or asylees, DACA or TPS recipients, or those with U visas and T visas, which are for victims of violent crime, trafficking, and domestic violence. The U.S. Supreme Court upheld the new rule, which the Trump administration argues is necessary to make sure that immigrants can support themselves financially. Plasencia notes that use of certain benefits doesn't automatically make someone a public charge. Rather, it triggers a step known as a totality of circumstances review.
You look at your age, employment, education, health, income to be able to determine your entire case.
There's concern that the rule change will prompt people to drop out of needed social programs or be afraid of contact with the 2020 census, schools, hospitals, and police officers. Plasencia says people concerned about the public charge rule can get more details on the website keepyourbenefitsca.org. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
Homeowners across California are facing a crisis with insurance companies refusing to renew policies due to wildfire concerns. In 2018 alone, the rate of non-renewals rose 10% in six California counties, including San Diego County. Some home buyers have also found themselves unable to get fire insurance coverage. But legislative relief may be coming soon for many impacted residents. A new bill, AB 2367, also called Renew California, has been introduced in the state legislature to help homeowners in high fire risk areas. San Diego Assemblywoman Lorena Gonzalez-Fletcher is an author of the bill, which is backed by the State Insurance Commissioner Ricardo Lara and by United Policyholders, a group advocating for impacted property owners. The bill would require insurance companies to write or renew policies for existing homes in communities that meet a new statewide standard for fire hardening. It would also authorize the insurance commissioner to require insurance companies to offer financial incentives for homeowners to make their homes more fire safe. The measure focuses on insurance companies that have been writing fewer homeowner policies in California and sharply increasing non-renewals of homes at risk of wildfire damage. Lack of insurance has sparked a wildfire domino effect that disrupts real estate markets and threatens the property tax base that local communities rely on to fund emergency services and more, according to the insurance commissioner. Fires have taken a destructive toll in recent years. The most recent data on insurance non-renewals does not even fully account for the impact of insurance drop due to some of the most catastrophic wildfires in California history that caused billions of dollars in losses in the last couple of years alone. Assemblymember Gonzalez-Fletcher says homeowners who have done all the right things, hardening their homes and mitigating for fire danger, are still seeing their insurance canceled or non-renewed. We can't allow insurance companies to continue to drop responsible homeowners from San Diego to the Sierras just because they can. Creating the Wildfire Resilience Task Force will bring certainty to consumer homeowners and bring balance back to our insurance markets, she predicts. Under AB 2367, the insurance commissioner, the California Governor's Office of Emergency Services, and the state fire marshal will develop statewide standards for home and community hardening in consultation with CAL FIRE and the Governor's Office of Planning and Research. Hardened homes and communities that meet this standard would receive a guaranteed offer for renewal of insurance, contributing to community resilience while ending the cycle of lost home sales, falling prices, and declining property values that are negatively impacting communities across the state. Insurance Commissioner Lara says more Californians are hardening their homes against wildfires, but they're not seeing the results of their hard work when it comes time to obtain or renew insurance. If you have a fire-hardened home in a fire-hardened community, you should be able to get insurance and keep it, he says. This law would apply only to existing homes whose owners are facing an abrupt change in insurance availability related to wildfire risk. Commissioner Lara and Department of Insurance staff have met with over 2,000 residents and local leaders across 15 counties suffering from this increased lack of insurance. Many spoke about their frustration at losing insurance even after decades with the same company and no claims history. Meanwhile, an increasing number of homeowners are turning to the FAIR plan, California's insurer of last resort, which offers coverage, but is less comprehensive and often more expensive compared to traditional insurance. Amy Bach, executive director of United Policyholders, says 3 years ago when insurers started dropping homeowners in rural counties and hitting them with up to 500% price increases, United Policyholders issued a call for California to follow the lead of Florida, Alabama, and South Carolina and create a risk reduction and insurance reward program. Now, the program has spread throughout the state, and insurers won't come to the table voluntarily. So, she says, the legislature must act. Governor Gavin Newsom has said that we must do more to stop non-renewals. Many legislators are also calling for action. The governor has signed two other new laws to address the issue in part, including one which protected nearly a million households near recent wildfire areas from non-renewal for a year, and another law which increased time limits on non-renewal notices from 45 to 70 days. There is no easy path forward, but by working together we can lower risk and preserve and protect communities that have been in place for generations, Commissioner Lara says. As for the proposed new bill to require that insurance companies cover homes, provided communities and homeowners meet new fire hardening standards, Commissioner Lara concludes, we have to renew California. AB 2367, the Renew California Act, also has support from the California Professional Firefighters and California State Firefighters Associations, Consumer Attorneys of California, and the Consumer Federation of California. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
The Alpine Chamber of Commerce will host a business town hall and forum for candidates running for San Diego County Supervisor in the 2nd District to replace Diane Jacob, who is retiring. The forum will be held on Tuesday, February 25th, from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. at the Alpine Library. All 4 candidates running have confirmed that they will attend. They are former State Senator Joel Anderson, behavioral health consultant Kenya Taylor, and home builder Brian Sesko. RSVPs are required. You can RSVP to attend the Supervisorial Candidate Forum by calling 619-445-2722. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
La Mesa has a new city manager. The council voted on January 28th to fill the vacancy by appointing Greg Humera, who has served as assistant city manager in La Mesa since 2016. He's a civil engineer with a Master of Public Administration degree. He previously served as director of public works and city engineer, as well as engineering project manager, a total of 20 years serving the city. As assistant city manager, he handled special projects for the city, including facilitating adoption of its climate action plan, staffing the new Citizen Task Force on Homelessness, and researching what La Mesa can do to address this significant regional issue. Mayor Rapostathos says he's pleased with the appointment, adding that Humera's engineering and public works background, along with his long-term institutional knowledge of the city's operations, uniquely qualify him to be successful here in La Mesa for years to come. Humera said he is humbled and honored by the appointment, adding, La Mesa is truly everyone's image of their own hometown, and I will continue to work to improve La Mesa quality of life. Reporting for East County Magazine from La Mesa, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Jonathan Getz with a Crime Beat report. A suspect is in custody after an attempted kidnapping of a 1-year-old girl Sunday afternoon outside of the Parkway Plaza shopping mall in El Cajon. According to witnesses, the man tried to grab the baby from her mother shortly after 3 p.m. Witnesses gave officers a description of the man who had fled the scene. El Cajon police officers located a man nearby who matched the description, and witnesses identified him as the same person who tried to abduct the young child. According to Lieutenant Darren Forrester with ECPD, the suspect, 40, appeared to be a transient. He was arrested for attempted kidnapping. Lieutenant Forster says this is believed to be an isolated incident. Anyone with information on this crime is asked to call the El Cajon Police Department at 619-579-3311.
The Drug Enforcement Agency, or DEA, has released its 2019 National Drug Threat Assessment, which outlines threats posed to the United States by domestic and international drug trafficking and by abuse of illicit drugs. In 2018, the year measured for the study, drug overdose deaths declined 4% overall, with more than a 13% decrease in overdoses from prescription opioids nationwide. But challenges remain, including the spread of deadly fentanyl and methamphetamine across the country. DEA Special Agent John Callery says that San Diego faces special challenges due to being on the international border. In 2018, the DEA San Diego seized record amounts of methamphetamine and fentanyl. But illicit drugs and the criminal organizations that traffic them continue to represent significant threats to public health, law enforcement, and national security, he notes. The opioid threat continues at epidemic levels, affecting large portions of the U.S. Meanwhile, the stimulant threat, including methamphetamine and cocaine, is worsening and becoming more widespread as traffickers expand their markets. Locally, the National Drug Threat Assessment found The Sinaloa Cartel and Jalisco New Generation Cartel are the most dominant Mexican transnational criminal organizations affecting the San Diego region and controlling the Tijuana to San Diego trafficking corridor. Gang activity in San Diego shows multi-drug gang associates transport and sell anything that will generate a profit. Gang members primarily sell methamphetamine, heroin, and marijuana. But trafficking of marijuana and pills, both stolen and counterfeit oxycodone, has increased due to high profit margins. Fentanyl availability is high and increased locally and nationally in 2018. Fentanyl remains the primary driver behind the ongoing opioid crisis, including counterfeit pain pills that contain fentanyl, often in deadly doses. Methamphetamine availability in San Diego is also high, coming largely from Mexico. Cocaine availability declined, but cocaine use by minors has actually increased, the DEA report warns. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, in the heart of San Diego's East County.
This is East County Magazine's People Power, profiling local people making a positive difference in our community and our world.
This is Jonathan Goetz with the People Power Report. This leap year, the Lakeside Chamber of Commerce is hosting a Leap of Kindness Day. The public is encouraged to drop off canned foods, dry goods, and school supplies for people in need during the month of February. Drop-off bins are located at the Lakeside Chamber of Commerce office, as well as Cafe 67, Mary's Donuts in Lakeside, the German American Club in El Cajon, and Akai Addiction Restaurant in Lakeside. Donated items can be dropped off now through February 27th and will be distributed to people in need on Leap Day, February 29th. If you would like a drop-off bin at your business, you can call 619-561-1031.
Rhonda Burt, a hiking leader with the Hakumba Hikers, died doing what she loved most. On Saturday, February 15th, Burt suffered a fatal heart attack while hiking with the group in the Anza Borrego Desert north of Hakumba Hot Springs. Despite a 911 call and responses by a sheriff's helicopter and ambulance, she could not be revived and was pronounced dead at the scene. Greg Curran, the administrator of Hakumba Hikers Group on Facebook, praised Rhonda Burt as a wonderful woman and hike leader who was passionate about many things and always kind and loving. He concluded, "Rhonda is now hiking new trails and soaring on to new adventures." The group will dedicate its March 14th hike to West Butte and Aslot Canyon to Rhonda Burt's memory with a memorial service before the hike. Her family will hold a separate memorial to celebrate her life on February 29th at 10 a.m. at Christ Community Church in El Centro. She was 57 years old and is survived by her children, Ryan and Rachel. Reporting for East County Magazine from Hakumba Hot Springs, this is Miriam Raftery.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
Toyota positions itself in marketing as a green company, but the automaker recently joined the Trump administration in a lawsuit against California, seeking to overturn our state's clean emission laws for vehicles. On Saturday morning, February 29th, protesters are organizing a march through Lemon Grove, ending in a rally at Larry Miller Toyota in Lemon Grove. A press release issued by Toyota Loves Trump, an environmental justice campaign organized by activist San Diego, states, "Toyota management wants to put their profit above our health. We must let them know this is unacceptable." The group invites everyone who cares about clean air, public health, and freedom from fossil fuels to join in a march through Lemon Grove starting at 9:30 a.m. Saturday. The marchers will meet outside a vacant social services building at 7065 Broadway in Lemon Grove and march to the Toyota dealership nearby, where they will hold a protest rally and hear from several speakers. A news release from the group says the rally is important because Toyota and Trump won't stand for a better environment, adding, "We will." You can RSVP to participate in the rally by visiting Toyota Trump Forever, and that's spelled Toyota Trump, the number 4, ever.com. Reporting for East County Magazine from Lemon Grove, this is Jonathan Getz.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Rebecca Williamson
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This week's Destination East County features spring wildflower walks, hawk watching in Ramona, a leap day concert in the Anza Borrego Desert, open farm day at the Oasis Camel Dairy in Ramona, comedy and concerts at the Magnolia in downtown El Cajon.
Plus, we have a preview of coming attractions, including Tomato Mania at the Water Conservation Garden, Trivia Nights at Wineworks in La Mesa, Agatha Christie's The Hollow at Lamplighters Theater, a salute to local heroes, St. Patrick's Day events, and the opening of Cajon Classic Cruises season in El Cajon.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more.
The Anza Borrego Foundation is offering guided walks to see the desert wildflowers and other plants each Friday morning from now through the end of March. Botany Society volunteers will lead hikes to view desert blooms. Participants will carpool to the flower area, so locations and driving distances will vary. If you go, be sure to bring plenty of water and sun protection. Reservations are required, and there is a limit of 30 people for these wildflower walks. To register, you can call 760-767-0446, extension 1002, or visit the Anza Borrego Foundation website at theabf.org.
Every Saturday in February, Hawkwatch continues at the Beegent Ranch in the Ramona Grasslands Preserve. The event starts at 10 a.m., but arrival at 9:30 is recommended. Hawk Watch is organized by the Wildlife Research Institute and includes up-close looks at falcons and other raptors with wildlife biologists in a seated show, as well as an option for later roadside observations along a 2-mile paved road where you can see a variety of other birds of prey, including eagles. Volunteers with high-powered telescopes will be on hand to enhance your viewing enjoyment. You can visit the Wildlife Research Institute website for details.
On February 29th, from 3 to 5:30 p.m., violinist Beth Chafee Hahn will perform a Leap Day violin concert in the Anza Borrego Desert State Park. Each original musical piece from her Desert Song Cycle CD will be accompanied by natural percussion and reading of a short poem. Enjoy time under awe-inspiring canyon walls and the setting sun and revel in the natural concert acoustics. Dress warmly and bring a blanket. This catered fundraiser, including wine and appetizers, will support the Anza Borrego Foundation's mission to help the park. Tickets include appetizers, wine, the concert, and CD. Find information at www.theabf.org. You can get tickets online or at the State Park store in the mall.
Oasis Camel Dairy in Ramona invites you to open Farm Day on February 29th and March 1st from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. A live animal show features talking parrots, galloping turkeys, farm dogs, and the biggest stars, camels. You can also feed camels, ride camels, and take camel selfies, as well as shop for camel products in the gift shop. For details and directions, you can visit cameldairy.com.
The Magnolia Center, formerly known as the East County Performing Arts Center, has a variety of shows coming up in the next few weeks. Upcoming performances include former singer-songwriter with the band Men at Work, Colin Hay, Emmy-nominated singer-songwriter and instrumentalist Ben Rector, and Latin American comedian Sofia Nino de Rivera. For tickets and the full lineup, you can visit MagnoliaSanDiego.com.
The Water Conservation Garden at Cuyamaca College in Rancho San Diego has several fascinating events coming up in late February and March. These include All About Worms and Composting on February 29th and Tomato Mania on March 7th, featuring heirloom garden tomato seedlings and a national tomato growing expert. You can find details at thegarden.org.
Wineworks in La Mesa invites you to test your knowledge, vie for prizes, and make new friends at trivia nights held each Thursday from 6 to 8 p.m. For more information, you can visit lamesawineworks.com.
Lamplighters Theater in La Mesa will present Agatha Christie's murder mystery, The Hollow, February 28th through March 29th. An unhappy game of romantic follow the leader explodes into murder one weekend at The Hollow. Dr. Christou, the Harley Street Lothario, is at the center of the trouble. When assembled all in one place, we find his wife, his mistress, his former lover, and other guests. As the list of romantic associations grows, so does the list of potential suspects when Dr. Christou is shot dead. Nearly everyone has a motive, but only one did the deed. Find tickets and details at lamplighterslamesa.com.
The La Mesa Chamber of Commerce invites you to its 12th annual Salute to Local Heroes. This year's theme is Hooray for Hollywood, and the event will be held on March 12th at Sequan Casino Resort from 5:30 to 9:30 p.m. First responders from La Mesa Police, Fire, and Paramedics will be honored, as well as members of the Retired Senior Volunteer Patrol. Those honored are chosen by their departments for selfless acts of courage, dedication, bravery, compassion, and service to our community. For tickets or details, you can visit salute.lamesachamber.com.
Julian T. and Cottage Arts invites you to celebrate St. Patrick's Day with a green-themed four-course tea from March 12th through 16th. There are three seatings daily. The menu includes soup, mini cheese scones, finger sandwiches, scones with curds, jam, and whipped cream, plus dessert. Vegetarian and gluten-free options are available on request. For reservations, visit julianT.com.
Hooley's Irish Pubs in La Mesa and Rancho San Diego invite you to come enjoy a pint of ale on St. Patrick's Day from 11 a.m. to midnight. Guests are invited to wear green and enjoy live music. For directions and details, visit hoolies.com.
Cajon Classic Cruises revs up for a new season starting April 15th with a full street closure in downtown El Cajon. The Classic Cruise nights continue each Wednesday night from 5 to 8 p.m. all spring and summer long. For details and a schedule of all the events, you can visit downtownelcajon.com.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more in the calendar and events section at our website, eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or you'd like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or Destination East County show here on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our site.
We'll be back soon with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County!
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
This is Helen Ofield from the Lemon Grove Historical Society, bringing you the sounds of history.
This is Miriam Raftery, guest hosting the Sounds of History on the East County Magazine show. This year is the 100th anniversary of women winning the right to vote. It's an appropriate time to share a story about a remarkable woman from East County's past. Helen Stoddard, a former resident of La Mesa, Lemon Grove, and Ramona, was a prominent leader in the fight to win women the right to vote, as well as in the temperance movement. She even earned a place in history at the national political level. Born in 1850 in Wisconsin, Stoddard earned a teaching degree at Genesee Wesleyan Seminary in New York, graduating as valedictorian in 1873. She married Shepherd Stoddard and had two sons, one of whom died in infancy. They lived briefly in Nebraska, but soon her husband's health was failing, so the family moved to Florida. And after he died in 1875, when Helen Stoddard was just 25 years old, she and her surviving young son moved to Texas to be near her parents. There, she became president of the Texas State Chapter of the Women's Christian Temperance Union, concerned over the negative impacts of alcoholism on women and their families. She also served on the faculty of Fort Worth University and helped establish a women's industrial arts college that today is known as Texas Women's University, where two buildings were named after her. She became an activist, lobbying successfully for a pure food law and laws against cocaine, gambling, child labor, raising the age of protection for girls from 12 to 15 in Texas, and more. She spent 3 months in Mexico as an organizer and twice served as a delegate to world conventions of the Women's Christian Temperance Union. She also wrote an article on the Texas suffrage movement for Susan B. Anthony's book, History of Woman Suffrage. In 1910, Helen Stoddard and her son moved to La Mesa, where she was soon elected president of the La Mesa Women's Club, which incidentally was founded in 1902 and is the city's oldest active service club today. She also headed up the local chapter of the Women's Christian Temperance Society, forerunner of the Prohibition movement. Local women embarked on barnstorming tours across the county to win support from men for women to gain the right to vote in California. La Mesa's newspaper and other local papers editorialized in favor of granting this right, since progressives in the region recognized that women would be key allies in local political issues and supporting social reforms related to child labor, public health, and regulating alcohol and vice. The La Mesa Scout editorialized that the right of women to vote is as absolute as that of a man. In October 1911, California's legislature amended the state constitution, granting women the right to vote. Days later, Helen Stoddard loaded up motor cars with about 40 members of the La Mesa Women's Club and headed to the Registrar of Voters office in downtown San Diego, registering them all to vote. In La Mesa, then known as La Mesa Springs, a battle was brewing over incorporation to become a city. Supporters wanted the city to control its own water supply and support public education, among other goals. But there was strong opposition, mainly from ranchers who feared that their taxes would go up. Early efforts at incorporation faltered until the women got involved and won the right to vote. A meeting at the La Mesa Opera House on December 1, 1911, ended in disorder without a vote on whether to incorporate after vocal opponents showed up. Supporters brought their case to the supervisors, and among the speakers arguing to the supervisors was suffrage leader Helen Stoddard. The district attorney reviewed the petition but rejected it at first for not meeting requirements to publish notices 3 times over 2 weeks. So the supporters circulated a new petition and adjusted boundaries to remove some of their key opponents. In February 1912, a new meeting was convened at the city's Opera House, a building that today is the Por Favor restaurant in downtown La Mesa. Citizens nominated candidates for public office in case the incorporation petition passed, and Helen Stoddard was nominated to serve, but she declined. Turned out she had higher ambitions, and we'll tell you about that in a minute. On February 7, 1912, a special election was held and the incorporation measure passed with help from La Mesa's newly registered women. Soon after, Stoddard declared her intention to run for Congress on the Prohibition Party ticket. She was the first woman in California to seek national office. Her campaign targeted women with the slogan, "A vote for Helen Stoddard is a vote for the home." She didn't win, but she did draw over 1,300 votes out of over 20,000 cast for 5 candidates in the race. A year later, she and her son Robert and his wife moved to Lemon Grove, where they spent the next 10 years, and in 1923, they moved to Ramona, where her son raised turkeys and chickens, while his mother continued her work in the temperance movement from their home overlooking the Ramona High School. In 1920, Helen Stoddard was elected president of the California State Chapter of the Women's Christian Temperance Union, and she served as a California delegate to the Congress Against Alcoholism in Washington, D.C. After her son's death in 1936 in Ramona, Stoddard and her daughter-in-law moved to Texas. Helen Stoddard died there in January 1941 at age 90, and her body was returned to San Diego for burial next to her son at Greenwood Memorial Park. She had lived through the Civil War, the Spanish-American War, World War I, and the dawn of World War II. Born in the pioneer era, in her lifetime she advanced education of women and saw women win the right to vote, helped lead the successful fight for La Mesa to become a city, ran for national political office, fought for the passage of the Prohibition Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, but also lived to see that repealed. Throughout her life, she was a tireless fighter for the rights of women and girls, touching the lives of people across our nation to this day.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment.
Okay. Today I'm interviewing Dr. Zore Garamani. My guest is the author of the novels The Moon Daughter, Sky of Red Poppies, which was translated into French and Persian, and The Commiserator, which is in Persian. Her work has received awards from the California Stories, KPBS One Book, One San Diego, and San Diego Book Awards. In addition, she has participated in a number of anthologies, including Tremors, New Fiction by Iranian American Writers, A Year in Ink, and The Poetry of Iranian Women. Welcome, Dr. Garamani. It's a pleasure having you on our show.
Thank you, and please call me Zoe.
Okay. Welcome, Zoe. Let's start with your new novel, The Moon Daughter. Give us a little teaser about this book. What motivated you to write it?
My first book, which you spoke of, had answered a lot of social, maybe some political questions, and altogether it was a glimpse into the past 40 years of Iran. So its success, surprising and thrilling as it was, would not guarantee that people necessarily like my writing. So obviously I was nervous about my second book because this one is purely fiction.
Sure.
But I will always want to write what I know more than other people know about, or what we say that in writing, as you know, write what you know best. And what I know best will always have a touch of Persian culture in it, because it was Iran where I was born and raised, and even though I have lived 40 years here, mm-hmm. my Iranian-ness will always be there, as you can hear it in my voice and accent. So this book is about a mother and a daughter. I always give my books a universal theme so readers of all walks of life can find something to relate to. And I wrote about an immigrant mother who, mm-hmm. her story is the first part of the book, and it's told in third person. And then I flip the coin and tell the rest of the story from the daughter's point of view, who is a lawyer, American raised, and very much an American.
Right.
So in that way, I have achieved two goals. One is to introduce part of the culture and the cultural differences, and also to bring it full circle to a resolution of what may or may not happen to immigrant families. And it is a universal story in that in this story, the woman is Iranian, but we are a society of mixed cultures. And often that mixed culture presents a problem between parents and their
yes.
children.
Yes.
So that story is touched on. And it's about women's rights in the Middle East.
And those really are universal themes, aren't they?
Exactly.
Your award-winning novel, Sky of Red Poppies, is about two girls coming of age in Iran during the 60s. Talk a little bit about the social differences in Iran that you shared through your book.
For those who are familiar with the book, they know I have tried to make my pen into a camera and go back to 40 years of life there. And like every society, there are many differences culturally, not so much cultural, but economically, religiously, politically. There are differences. Yet one thing that we all shared was that we went to an all-girls school where you were required to wear a denim uniform. Mm-hmm. And once everybody wears that uniform, those social classes are masked.
Right.
It was only after school where these two friends show how different they are. One comes from a fundamental religious family. She's an activist, she's an intellectual. And the other one is an ordinary girl like I am, who just gets educated and her family is well-to-do and they can send her abroad, and she ends up abroad and never gets involved in anything. So then the one who is not involved tells the story of the one who was involved. And then it comes again full circle after 40 years into the story of a friendship and its redeeming powers.
Sounds like very optimistic themes.
I never lose hope. And even though there are sad parts of it, there's always hope.
Well, I know, obviously, immigration and the experiences, the generational changes, and friendship are big themes for you. I guess that's why you've been called the voice of the Iranian-American diaspora. What does that phrase mean to you, and how does it drive your work?
I'm glad to hear this. I had never heard people call me that.
I read it.
I have heard many other voices who are much stronger voices in diaspora, but maybe I am the naive voice in diaspora because I have never been involved in any activities. I've never had a clear political view. But I believe that this country is, rather than being a melting pot, it is a collage. Nobody really melts.
Right.
People keep their identities and come together in the most beautiful way and create a society that is unique. Each person brings their good traits into it and tries to shed the traits that are not so desirable. And that makes us a better society. So my gift, my 2 cents worth of this, being part of this collage and being for the past 40 years included in this beautiful society, my gift to it is to represent my culture in the best way that I know.
And how have you changed during this process, this 40-year process? I mean, how has your cultural beliefs or your identity changed?
When I moved here in 75, I knew it was for good. That was years before any revolution had happened in Iran, years before restrictions were imposed on women. And I had to sit down and think, if this is where I am going to live for the rest of my life, I might as well blend in with the society. So I accepted the American culture right from day one.
Wow.
And never argued. I bragged about the fact that I make one of the best apple pies you could taste. rather than force my own culture on my children, I raised 3 of the best Americans I know, and they each in their own field are an asset to their society. And 2 of them don't even understand or speak a word of Persian, but that is not their duty to do. If they want to do it, they can always do it, and I'll be happy to help them. But that is my language, my culture, and they can only pick it up if they want to. I will not push it at them.
Is there anything that you miss the most about your culture?
There's a lot. There's, above everything else, the unconditional love that I received while I lived in Iran, and I will never receive it anywhere else. And I have friends of all walks of society, but sometimes when it's put to test, I see that we Iranians are a bit crazy about friendship. We just go that extra mile. And I miss being surrounded by people who would go that extra mile. I do miss being recognized, being known in my small town.
It's having a smaller society.
Exactly. Well, even if it's not small, once you do something good, you're a good student or you're a good writer, you become known by people.
Okay.
Here, everybody is living their own lives and it's more private.
The individualism.
Individualism. I don't even know some of my neighbors, and I've lived on the same dead-end street for 14 years. So if this was back in Iran, I would have been friends with most of them. We would know each other maybe by first name, you know. And I do have very good neighbors that I do know. I'm not saying that everyone is like that. But that intimacy is what I miss the most. And the emotional, poetic way that they speak from day to day, even on an everyday, even an illiterate person knows hundreds of verses by heart. That I miss very much.
Interesting. So that brings me to my next question, which is about the Iranian American community in San Diego. Is there a strong community as such, and how do you participate in it?
There's a very strong community. I believe the last someone told me there are 68,000 Iranian Americans in San Diego. And there are many wonderful organizations. There's the Persian Cultural Center. There's the House of Iran in Balboa mm-hmm. Park. There's the Association of Iranian Professionals, numerous societies. And while I am a member of some of those and help here and there when I am asked to help, I am not 100% active in any of those because I have so many other volunteer works. I am much more diligent about being a friend of the Central Library than I am as a member of the PCC. So I do consider this my general big society, my big community, rather than focus on a smaller group just because we came from the same country.
I understand. Let's move to Sky of Red Poppies, which I know is on the reading list of many high schools and colleges. You've also had hundreds of articles and short stories appearing in U.S. and foreign publications. You've been successful. To what do you attribute your success, and do you have any advice for all those scribblers out there listening?
Yes. I first of all, it is true that luck has a lot to do with it. I owe my success to the San Diego readers. Mm. I could have published this book while I lived in Chicago, and none of this may have happened. There's a certain warmth and certain thirst for culture and knowing more among San Diegans that I've never seen anywhere else.
Really?
And I also was lucky that mm-hmm. apparently my book, as soon as it came out, fell in the right hands and was represented right. by the right readers. So a lot of it has to do with luck. I'm not going to, even after 3 years, I am not going to let it get into my head to say, hey, here I am, the great writer they discovered. No, here I am, the lucky writer who was discovered. And I do hope more and more of my colleagues will be discovered in the same way, and I wish them well. But my advice would be never give up. Never, ever give up, because you're the one who brings the success about.
That's wonderful advice. Just one brief question to finish up. What are you writing next?
My next novel is titled The Basement. When I wrote Sky of Red Poppies, people asked me if there was a sequel to it. And I said no, because that story ended. It's that duration of time when major changes happen. And then I read The Help, which is about the domestic help. And I thought, oh my God, is there a story about the domestic help in Iran? Oh. So this, I play with the word basement, because not only did the staff live in the basement of the house, but they were the foundation of the many of the changes to come. So the word basement appealed to me. And in there, you will meet a lot of the characters that you have already met in Great. Sky of Red Poppies.
And when will this book come out?
I hope by the end of the year, but you know how it is.
That's right. Well, we'll look forward to it. Our time is up, Zoe, but thank you again for joining us.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It's been a pleasure, and I'm so glad to tell you that the blurb that East County Magazine wrote, something that East County Magazine wrote in their review, Dennis Moore wrote that, now appears on the back cover of the French edition of my book.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Well, thank you again. And for more information on Zoe Garamani and her work, please visit her website at www.zoegaramani.com. And let me spell that. It's Zoegahremani.
Again, this is Raina Menashe, and you have been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Jonathan Getz with the Green Scene Report. A lawsuit has been filed against the City of Santee, claiming the city erred in passing its climate action plan and a related environmental impact report without accounting for potential emissions from Finita Ranch. Finita Ranch, proposed by Home Fed, would add 3,000 homes and increase traffic on already congested roadways. The lawsuit was filed in San Diego Superior Court by three environmental advocacy groups, Preserve Wild Santee, the Center for Biological Diversity, and the Climate Action Campaign. Building Finita Ranch would require an amendment to the city's general plan. The project could also be subject to a vote of the people if a ballot initiative passes, which would give residents a say on projects that exceed density allowed in the general plan. The city's climate action plan, called Sustainable Santee, passed in January by the City Council, along with the Environmental Impact Report. The CAP, or Climate Action Plan, cost the city $275,000 in a process begun in 2014. But the suit contends that this violated the California Environmental Quality Act. The plaintiffs contend that the Climate Action Plan creates a loophole that would allow Finita Ranch's development to avoid consideration of mitigation options to reduce the project's negative impacts on the climate. The environmental groups want the court to order Santee to rescind certification of the EIR and prevent Finita Ranch's developer from skirting environmental review by relying only on the Climate Action Plan. The city has not conducted any environmental analysis on Finita Ranch specifically. The San Diego Union-Tribune first reported on the lawsuit, indicating that Home Fed and the Santee City Manager declined to comment on the lawsuit. But John Buse, an attorney with Center for Biological Diversity, states, "The climate emergency demands real, enforceable measures to cut pollution, not free passes to sprawl."
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
The East County Magazine Show airs Mondays and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine Radio Show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.